try to select lessons that will somewhat complement one another, first one to the second one. Sometimes that may not succeed, but anyway, I try to do that, try to relate them together. And I thought, well, this one here might go with that one as we are trying to be aware of how to live the good life here and prepare for a better life that is to come, that maybe zeal would be appropriate to connect to that. The text in Acts chapter 9, of course, is where it talks about the Apostle Paul as he is looking back upon what he once was. He was, it says there, breathing out threatenings and slaughter against the church. And so later on in that chapter, of course, he is converted. And he looked back upon that a couple other places in the book of Acts and talked about that and talked about the kind of person that he was. But he certainly would be someone that we would believe to be a person with a lot of zeal. Where would we be without zeal in every endeavor of life? A lot of inventions have been made because of people who had some zeal in pursuing an idea at the time that probably would have seemed ridiculous to anyone. I was watching a Western the other day, supposedly based on a true story, of a man who figured out how to calculate the speed of light. And he even suggested that someday if we can figure that out, we'll know, maybe be able to tell how far away a particular star is. And who knows, we'll be able to maybe even travel to the stars. Well, of course, this is back in the cowboy days. They're looking at him and thinking, this guy needs to be locked up. He's a lunatic. What kind of a stupid idea is that? But you know what? He himself figured out how to measure the speed of light, and we've been to the moon and back. So zeal is what prompts a lot of that kind of thinking. Otherwise, we might still be walking. If Henry Ford and other men didn't decide that, you know what, there's got to be a way that I can get this buggy here to move on its own without having to feed a horse. And so they had an idea, and they worked on it. Ladies might be doing laundry on a scrub board, had it not been for someone who had the concept of making a washing machine. And one that, of course, first of all, very primitive, but at least it worked. And now look what we've got today. I got a washing machine there at home that's smarter than I am, I'm quite certain. I don't know how to do it justice. I've sort of figured out how to put stuff in, set it, wash it, put them in the dryer, but that's about it. I mean, you get to talking about all those other positions on there. I don't know what those are for. Have no clue what that's all about. But I'm glad to have it. Glad I don't have to get out of washboard. So we need zeal. It's really a part of our success as Christians, and our approach to serving God should be that we are zealous about it. That we really are on fire about what we believe. So keep that in mind as we talk about the subject, and then look at our own life. Ask ourselves, do I really have enough zeal? It comes and goes. There's four different words in the New Testament that are translated zeal. The word's actually found over 40 times. It's not always translated with the word zeal, I should say. We'll note some of them here in a little bit. But so it must be a concept that's kind of important. It comes from a Greek word, and again, I'll not try to read that for you. Thayer defines it as excitement of mind, ardor, fever of spirit. We all know what a fever is when we get one in our physical body. Well, this is where you have a fever of spirit. Your mind is on fire. Your mind is thinking of great and wonderful things that you might be able to do. As a noun, it becomes a zealot. Someone who's uncompromising. They're going to keep pushing forward because they've got this fire of an idea burning within them. It applied to a sect of the Jews back in the first century, bitterly antagonistic to the Romans. Now, this is why the enemies of Jesus were able to try to portray him to be in competition with the ruling class at that time. Because there was a sentiment among the people that we need to throw off this Roman domination. We're tired of it. We want to be a free people again. So, taking advantage of that, they would try to accuse Jesus of becoming a king, an earthly king. Well, John 6, verse 15, I believe it is, says that he perceived that they were coming to make him a king. He went away by himself alone. That's not the kind of kingdom he wanted. But that was the perception out there, and these zealots were promoting that idea. Josephus refers to them as a fourth sect of Jewish philosophy. Of course, you had scribes, Pharisees, you had a lot of others, but they were important enough to get on Josephus' radar. Not really mentioned, we'll talk more about where this does come up, but it's not really referred to in the same way as scribes and Pharisees are in the New Testament. In AD 6, the zealots rebelled, and the man that founded them, leading in that, and that revolt concept just kept being nursed along by these zealots, on fire again for this idea of freedom from Roman domination. It propelled them, it pushed them to be relentless. Unfortunately, they pushed that concept to the limit in AD 70, and it led to destruction of Jerusalem. You know, if you're looking for some book to curl up with, it's exciting. I get you a copy of Josephus. Better get a magnifying glass first. It's small print most of the time. And you can read about this. They just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. The Romans did not necessarily want to destroy Jerusalem, but they could not get these people to stop. Why? They were zealous and were zealots. And one of the apostles belonged to this sect, Simon the Zealot. You read about him in Luke 6 or in Acts 1. So even one, well, we would have to say, in Jesus' inner circle, as far as his political views was concerned, was a zealot. Now you can kind of see why that would be useful to the Lord, that same amount of zeal that he had for that cause, for the liberation of Israel, if you could channel that over here into presenting the gospel to the world, you'd have something. Zeal is fervor. It simply put, it just simply means a desire to have. This abundant life, greater life we talked about in previous lessons. Zeal is what propels us to go after that. We have a desire for it, more than anything else. James now uses it negatively. Here in James chapter 4 and verse 2, he talked about the fact that they lusted. Now, the word lust simply means that strong desire to have. And a lot of times this word is used in a negative context, as it is here in James chapter 4 and verse 2. You lust, that is, you have this fervent, burning desire. You lust, but do not have. So, you commit murder. How are you telling a bunch of Christians that? And you are envious and cannot obtain. So you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. Zeal will drive a person in one direction or another, and a lot of times it's in a negative direction. Here, James is saying their desires were not being satisfied. Now, the reason is, as he goes on to talk about it, they were asking all right, but they were asking so that they could use these things to satisfy their own lust. And so, no, God was not going to bless them just so they could go out and become greater sinners than they were. You do not have because you do not ask. They were not asking according to the will of God. But their desires were not satisfied. But that's what the word has in mind. this very intense desire for something that just drives a person. We've seen it in people. Now, this is worse, believe it or not, worse in the absence of zeal, is zeal without knowledge. Now, go back here again to the book of Acts. Remember what Paul said. He said concerning his kinsmen in the flesh, he said, I bear them record. They have a zeal for God. Not Acts, Romans chapter 9, rather. I bear them record. They have a zeal for God, but not according to knowledge. Their knowledge was wrong. You could not take away their zeal. Romans chapter 10. I get it right in a moment. They had the zeal all right, but they were channeling it in the wrong direction. But if you're just talking about zeal, they had it. They were not justified in what they were doing, that's for sure. Their endeavors were in the wrong direction. It was leading them to have their own righteousness instead of submitting to the righteousness of God. But they were zealous, and that's what we're trying to get at here. Is what's it like to be a zealous person? Well, that's what it's like. To not even accept the knowledge that people are trying to give you because you're so zealous and intent on some idea. And, of course, concerning the Jews of Paul's day, their concept of the Messiah didn't fit what Jesus actually came to do. And so, in their zeal, they rejected him. Galatians 4, verse 18, it's good always to be eagerly sought in a commendable manner, and not only when I am present with you, to be eagerly sought. There again, their endeavor is not justifiable in the wrong direction, as was the Jews, but they had that burning desire. Now think about that. If we can get that zeal channeled in the right direction, then we've got something. But we need, obviously, zeal and knowledge. The Jews had zeal without knowledge. False teachers very often will have a lot of zeal. Back to Galatians 4 again. They had all kinds of zeal, but no knowledge. Verse 17. They eagerly seek you, not commendably, but they wish to shut you out in order that you may seek them. In other words, these false teachers were trying to gain a following. They were zealous. They were on fire for what they believed. The trouble is, what they believed was wrong. And they were eagerly seeking to find these disciples then that would follow them, but not in a commendable way. So this context is actually showing us that zeal can be a bad thing when it's not connected to the proper knowledge. Again, example, Paul. Prior to his conversion, would we say that Paul was a zealous man? We certainly would. He even talks about it at times, just what he had accomplished among the Jews. Now, over there in Philippians, but of course he says, I count all that but loss. Philippians chapter 3, it didn't mean anything to him anymore because he coupled his zeal with knowledge, proper knowledge, and he left all that behind. He recognized then, wow, I was zealous, but I was doing the wrong thing. The cults of our day and false religions of our day. Zealous? Oh, yeah, better believe they're zealous. Several years ago, I had occasion to meet this fellow who had been a member of the Unification Church. You know, those are the ones that stood on the street corners and sold flowers. They were commonly referred to as Moonies. That was not a designation they really liked, but to identify them, that's who they were. This fellow had been converted. He's now a Christian. But you know what? He still was on the street corner selling flowers. That's a good way to make a living. But his zeal now was no longer going in the direction of the Reverend Moon. it was going in the direction of serving Christ, and what a worker he was in the church there in Tampa, Florida. They were able to convince him of the truth. And he rechanneled all of that zeal that he had and put it to good use. That's what we're talking about. That's what we hope can happen. Take that zeal and knowledge. Now, it's essential for us. We have to have it. And we can't take a kind of a lackadaisical attitude. These Jews, as we've already talked about, they were zealous, all right, to the point of trying to do what Paul once did, try to put him to death. When Peter and John refused the orders of the Sanhedrin, they experienced indignation, which was another form of that word, zeal, in Acts 5, verse 17. They were filled with envy toward the apostles, Acts 13, 45, and there's any number of others we can find. So they were zealous, all right, as we must be, taking the zeal and channeling it in the right direction. It motivates us to want to be free from sin, to not be lukewarm, but to have our sins forgiven. It should motivate us to be zealous in our duties. In Titus chapter 2, which we looked at in that previous lesson briefly, but we come back across it here because it fits in this one as well. The grace of God has appeared, bringing salvation to all men, teaching us to deny ungodliness, worldly lust, live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present age, looking for the blessed hope and the appearing of the Lord and our great God and Savior Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us, that what? That we might be redeemed from every lawless deed and glorify himself, a people for his own possession, zealous for good deeds. So like Paul was going in the wrong direction, but he took that zeal and he channeled it in the right direction. That's what we have to do. Use what ability and the zeal we have to do the right thing for a change and do the wrong thing. And most Christians I've run across have all kinds of talent, but some of it is not being used because they're missing that ingredient of zeal in their life for doing everything they can. And that's a real shame. You need to work on that. The presence of love will not allow for that impure zeal to begin to develop in us. When we talk about what love is all about, 1 Corinthians 13:4, all the characteristics of love, if we have those, and we're really cultivating those, then our zeal is going to stay channeled in the right direction. And besides that, it's mandated by God. We are to add to our faith. We're not to remain stagnant at one point right after we become a Christian. We're supposed to keep growing, adding to our faith, virtue, knowledge, temperance, all these other things. Add them to your faith. We do that by receiving the word. Remember in Acts 17, 11, it says of these people here, Bereans, more noble than those in Thessalonica, for they received the word with great eagerness, examining the scriptures daily to see whether these things were so. They couldn't get enough. They were on fire. They wanted to learn more. I don't think they looked for minimums. I think they looked for maximums because of the zeal they had within them. Romans 12, 11 talks about being fervent in spirit. There's our word again. So, as I said, it's translated and used about 40 times, but not always translated the same way. So we have to look there and find it. They were fervent in spirit. They were on fire. Well, as we recognize the great opportunities we have, we have to supply the zeal. God can't supply that force. That's got to come from within. And we're either going to have it or not, depending on how dedicated we are. Now, if you're not a Christian, you haven't begun to apply that zeal properly yet. You have to become a Christian if that zeal that you have is going to be channeled in the right direction. And then be zealous in serving God. And so, are you a child of God this morning? If not, we urge you to seriously consider. You still have this opportunity while we're assembled. Let it be known. We'll baptize you into Christ for the remission of your sins. You need to make some kind of correction in your life. You've lost your zeal. Get it back. Determine you're going to be more zealous and faithful in the future. Let us know if we can help you in any way again as we stand and sing together.